Okay, Rabose, Parshas Bamidbar. And for such a big Parsha, honestly, not so much really going on. In the Parsha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes a census of Bnei Yisrael. We learn basically how the Jews encamped, right, in the, with the Degalim, with the ways and the, they were surrounded the Mishkan. We learn that the Levium replaced the firstborn, and we see that the Levium are counted separately from Am Yisrael, and that's basically it. So we're going to do what we can in the short time that we have. You know, also very interesting that, you know, Chazal write that Parshas Bamidbar is always before Shavuos. So we'll have to talk about that, why exactly that is true. So, but first off, let's grab one of the flags and just talk about that. Reuven's flag is actually the Dudaim. I mean, we don't see this in the Pasuk, actually. The Pasuk doesn't actually say what was on each flag, but the Ramban, right, and the Midrashim, right, fill us in. Some of the Midrashim give colors, which is actually very cool. But basically, the Ramban points out that Reuven's flag was the Dudaim. It was the Dudaim. Now, if you're not familiar with the reference, so that's a reference to, in Sefer Bereishis, Reuven, who was young at the time, according to all accounts, right? The Sforno writes that he was like 5 or 6. So he saw that his mother had stopped giving birth, right? His mother Leah. So he picked some flowers called the Dudaim, which were some sort of pregnancy, enhancers or whatever. And gave them to his mother. And Rachel, who was struggling to have kids herself, right, she basically bought the flowers in exchange with a knife from Yaakov, and on that night, Leah ended up conceiving Yisachar. And that was basically the story of the Dudaim. Now, the question is, obviously, why in the world is that significant enough to put it on Reuven's flag? Right, I would have expected it to be something to do with being with the firstborn or something like that. Now, yes, Enochinami, Reuven lost the firstborn. He wasn't actually... didn't get the Bechorah, right? That went to Yosef. But the Dudaim seems like very, very random, kind of inconsequential story. Why would that be put on Reuven's flag as like his family emblem? So I think to answer that question, you need to think about that episode not from Leah or Rachel's point of view, but from Reuven's. Right? Again, think about it. You're a kid. He goes out of his way to get his mother a gift, and because ostensibly, right, he can tell that she's upset, right? She sees that, you know, she wanted to have more kids or whatever it is, and she's sad. So he goes out of his way, right, to get her a gift, right, get these Dudaim. And what does Leah do? She turns around and sells it to Rachel. Now, I don't know about you, but if I got my mom a gift and she turned it around and gave it to, you know, her sister or friend or whatever, I'd be kind of insulted. Like, my wife just got my mom a Mother's Day gift. It was a little mug. It said, "This is a Mother's Day gift from your son, bought by your daughter-in-law," which is perfect. You know, it was totally perfect. And now, if I saw that in my aunt's kitchen, you know, I'd be a little insulted. Not that I, obviously, not really, but like, it would rub me the wrong way. But what do we see? We don't see anything from Reuven. Reuven doesn't say a word, right? There's no response in the Chumash. There's no response in Chazal. He's 100% fine. Right? Doesn't complain at all. So that, I think, if you really think about it, is Reuven's kind of shining mida, right? At the end of Parshas Vayechi as well, right? When Yaakov takes the birthright from Reuven in front of all his brothers, right? He criticizes his actions, etc. He is silent. He doesn't get the kingship. He doesn't get the kahuna. He doesn't get the firstborn. But he doesn't say anything, right? He doesn't respond. And this is Reuven's godless, I would argue, that he was someone who was able to accept, right, the decrees of HaKadosh Baruch Hu or whatever without complaints, right? He was happy with what he had. Now, there is one problem with this idea, and you're probably thinking about it and maybe screaming at your phone, right? What happened with Reuven and Bilhah, right? The story in Parshas Vayishlach, that long story short, when Rachel dies, right, Yaakov moves in with Bilhah, who was Rachel's maidservant, and Reuven, I just use the Gemara's version in Shabbos, right, moves Yaakov's bed into his mother's tent, right? He was upset, right, that Leah, right, had been slighted, had been assaulted, so he moves Yaakov's bed into Leah's tent, and that's actually what caused him. That's where Yaakov criticized him in Parshas Vayechi and caused him to lose the Bechorah. Now, that's not sitting back and just accepting the psak, right? So what happened to Reuven's ability to be Mevater, just to sit back and be like, okay, this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, this is what Yaakov wants, my father, etc. So what happened there? So my brother Ari made the obvious distinction, which I honestly hadn't thought about, and that in the case of the Dudaim, and in the case with the birthright and the kuna and the kingship, that's Reuven dealing with his own kavod. But in the case of Yaakov's bed, right, that in that scenario, Reuven is dealing with his mother's, Right, as my brother pointed out, for his own kavod, Reuven is ready to yield. He's ready to study. He's not self-serving. He accepts whatever. Fine, no problem. But it comes to someone else's kavod, right? So that Reuven is not ready to give up, right? He's going to fight and he's going to, you know, do things perhaps a little bit impetuously to make sure that other people get the kavod that they deserve. Now, yes, Enochinami, that Yaakov criticized Reuven for that action. But the Gemara in Shabbos, as we mentioned, in Gemara in Daf Nunhei, it says that it wasn't necessarily inappropriate what Reuven did, right? Because the Gemara there says, Kol ha'omer Reuven chata, eino ela toa. Anybody who says that Reuven sinned, right, is making a mistake. Shenemar vayu b'nei Yaakov shnei masar, that's the pasuk immediately afterwards, that Yaakov's kids were 12, and obviously we know Yaakov had 12 kids, so the Gemara says, malame chikulun chikulun ka'achas, all of them were equal, right, all of them were on the same level, that Reuven had not sinned by that action. Now so that wasn't necessarily inappropriate what he did, right? Enochinami, Yaakov fell for whatever reason, the impetuousness was a problem for the birthright and being a leader, but the action in and of itself was not a chet, perhaps because Reuven was looking out for his mother's kavod, and that was Reuven's ability to kind of like analyze and see who needs to be not stepped on, and then in terms of his own kavod, right, then he was able to kind of step back, right, and be humble and you know, not kind of like be arrogant and step in, you know, and try and you know, push people around for his own kavod. Okay, and that perhaps is an appropriate flag emblem, right? Because if someone has that mida, that characteristic of being humble and accepting whatever happens, and then at the same time being able to see it and protest when someone else is insulted, right, and kind of step up for other people, right? That's obviously, you know, midos that we can embody. Okay. Parshas Bamidbar, we have to talk about, obviously, the counting. But we'll get to that in a minute. Parshas Bamidbar is always before Shavuos, right? Always before Shavuos. And why is that? Why? So there are many, many, several reasons. I don't want to say many, many, but at least several reasons that I saw. Let's start with this. The Torah says, "Rav Eila told us Aaron and Moshe b'yom diber Hashem es Moshe b'har Sinai." Right, Parak Gimel. That's how it starts off. Parak Gimel starts listing the lineage of Aaron. Right, Aaron's kids, the Levim, the Kohanim, etc. And the problem is, right, again, this is Rashi already points out. The pasuk says, "Eila told us Aaron u'Moshe." Right, these are Aaron and Moshe's kids. Right, and then it lists Aaron's kids. Right now, if the Torah, Rashi asks the obvious question, right? If the Torah was just going to list Aaron's kids, it should have just said Eila Toldos Aaron. Why does it say Eila Toldos Aaron Umoshe? So he quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Yates, right? That if a teacher teaches a student Torah, right, it's considered as if he gave birth to them, right? Kasher Yelado is the language, right? As if he raised him. So since Moshe taught Aaron's sons, right, they were also considered Moshe's sons as well, and that's why the Torah says these are the generations of Aaron and Moshe. Problem is that, obviously, as you may be thinking, right, Aaron's sons are not the only ones who Moshe taught Torah to. Right? Obviously, he taught all of Am Yisrael. So it really should have said, before the entire census, right, at the beginning of the Parsha, should have said, Ve'ela Toldos Moshe. Right? If that's a pshat, if that's why you're telling me that Moshe is listed here, should have said, these are the generations of Moshe, and listed all of Am Yisrael because he taught them Torah, if that's what we're going with. Right? Then you should have jumped into the census for Reuven, Shimon, etc. So the Nativ in Hamek Davar, right, actually asks this question. Not my question, right? The Nativ asks this question. And he answers by the following. He explains that a student is called his son, right? A student is called a Rebbe's son, right? Only when the student learns in depth from the Rebbe, from the teacher, right? What the Nativ calls Chachmas HaTalmud. If a person acquires Chachmas HaTalmud, the ability to learn on a deep level from his Rebbe, that's what he calls it. That's what makes someone into a Beria Chadasha, into a new creature, right? Into a new person, right? And the Tziv explains that from the majority of Am Yisrael, they didn't really reach that level, right? They only reached a basic level, right, of Limud HaTorah, and only after, when they entered Eretz Yisrael, and they had more time to study, which is a little bit weird, because they probably had a lot of time to study in the desert. Okay, but after they entered Eretz Yisrael, then they were able to get to this level of Chachmas HaTalmud, but in the desert, right, it was more exploratory, cursory, you know, whatever you want to call it. Whereas Bnei Levi, right, understood, either way, they took it upon themselves, that's probably better, took it upon themselves to study it in more depth, and specifically the Bnei Aaron, right, were unique in their depth and their understanding and their knowledge of Torah study. Therefore, the pasuk called them Moshe's children. But then the Nativ gets fancy. And he points out, Mamash, an unbelievable diuk, fantastic diuk. He says, if you see the pasuk, if you quote the pasuk again, right, Eila told us Aaron and Moshe, what's the end of the pasuk? These are the generations of Aaron and Moshe. Then what is it? It says, B'yom diber Hashem es Moshe b'har Sinai. On the day when Hashem spoke to Moshe on Har Sinai. Right? again, it seems to be saying that this is a list of Moshe and Aaron's kids on the day that Moshe went up to Har Sinai, meaning that Aaron's kids were already considered Moshe's kids on the day that Moshe went up to the mountain. The problem is that if the only reason they were considered Moshe's kids is because they attained the depth of knowledge and understanding and Chachmas and Talmud that no other Jew in that generation reached, so why does the Pasuk say that they reached that level on the day of Matan Torah? What do you mean on the day of Matan Torah? They couldn't possibly have gotten to that level before Moshe had gotten to that level. Moshe was just going up. He was just getting Kabbalah's Torah. Moshe received the Torah on that day. How could you tell me they could have reached such a level of understanding the day they got it? So the Netziv explains a concept that's actually found in many places in Chazal and has a tremendous impact on us personally. He says that since on that day, on the day of Kabbalah's Torah, the Bnei Aaron accept, Nadav and Avihu, right, Elazar and Itamar, they accepted upon themselves to learn the Torah with that depth. It was as if they were already considered new creations. They were already considered Moshe's sons. Right? Just because they had a Kabbalah, they decided that this is what they were going to do. Right? That already gave them a schus to the point where they were considered to be a Beriah Chadasha. They were considered to be a new person, and as if they had already started down that path. Right? And Netziv points out that's similar to what the Gemara says about Reish Lakish in Bava Metzia and Daf Pei Dalet. He said that the moment he accepted upon himself old Torah mitzvos, right, the Gemara said that he lost his strength. A very funny story, actually. That he said that he kind of jumped into the river after Rabbi Yochanan, who he saw was very beautiful, and Rabbi Yochanan convinced him to learn Torah, and then he would give him his sister, who was even more beautiful. So basically, Rabbi Yochanan got Reish Lakish to accept upon himself, right, that he was going to sit and learn Torah, even though he hadn't learned a word in his life. He was a thief. At that moment, says the Gemara, he became weaker, and he couldn't then jump back out of the river because Talmid Chachamim are weakened from sitting and sitting and studying for many hours of Torah study, and he wasn't able to jump back out of the river. But that's the point over here, that a person undertakes or accepts upon himself, the desire, the commitment to sit and learn, right? They become a new person even before they start. Now, obviously, you have to go and do it. Right? You can't just bail on it. But you already become a new person when you make that decision, even before you lift a finger. And this idea is found in many, many places in Chazal. My great Chavrusa, Josh Cantor, right, the great horse, is fond of pointing out Atosos and Ksuvas and Daf Samach Gemal. There, the Gemara tells a story about Rabbi Akiva. Right, Rabbi Akiva, right, we perhaps heard this story around Sfiras Omer time. Rabbi Akiva, right, the Gemara says, right, obviously married Rachel, right, daughter of Kalba Savua, and Kalba Savua was not happy with the Shidduch, and he made a shvua, made a neder that if his daughter married Rabbi Akiva, right, who was an Amoret at the time, right, he knew nothing, right, he wouldn't give them any support whatsoever. Kalba Savua, a very rich guy, wasn't going to give them any support. Meanwhile, right, Rachel had said to Rabbi Akiva, I'll only marry you if you agree to study Torah. So Rabbi Akiva decided, right, to go learn, and, you know, sure enough, the Gemara says that he came back 12 years later, and Rachel would have, she heard Rachel over talking to someone and saying, oh, if he would only learn here another 12 years, and Rabbi Akiva went back to the Beis Medrash. Anyway, long story short, he came back 24 years later, being an Adam Gadol, built tremendous, tremendous Talmud Chacham. Kalba Savua, when Rabbi Akiva came back to town, right, Kalba Savua heard that a great Rav was coming. He didn't know who it was. And he went to go see him, says the Gemara, because maybe the Rav could annul the neder that he made. Right? By then, Kalba Savua felt bad that he wasn't supporting his daughter. Right? Again, he made a neder not to give his daughter any money. And that's 24 years, and she's living literally in poverty. So Kalba Savua felt bad. He wanted to annul the neder, to uproot the neder that he had made. So Rabbi Akiva, who is the Rav, asked him, if you knew that the guy you swore not to support would become a Talmud Chacham, would you have made that neder? So Kalba Savua said, of course not. So, and Rabbi Akiva annulled the neder, and Kalba Savua, you know, I think it's, Gemara says they gave half his possessions or something like that. Tosos there, which my Chavrusa Josh likes to quote, asks an obvious question. Now, it's not obvious if you don't know anything about the halachas of annulling nedarim, which I didn't until I learned Maseches Nedarim in the Daf Yomi. But anyway, if you know anything about getting rid of nedarim, there's an obvious question. There's a rule that you can't use nolad, something called nolad, to uproot, right, a neder. Basically, what that means is, if something wasn't true at the time of the neder, at the time of the vow, right? And then becomes late, true later, meaning it is born, literally, nolad means born. It comes true later. It was born later. If a reality happens later, you can't use that to get rid of the nether. For example, if a guy says, I'm not giving any money to Joe Schmo, and someone says, well, if you had known Joe Schmo was a Talmid Chacham, would you have made that nether? And the guy says, no, of course not. Of course I'd like to give money to Talmid Chachamim. So then the nether is no good. But that's only true if Joe Schmo was a Talmud Chacham at that time, right? Not if he became a Talmud Chacham 30 years later, 25 years later. So how does in the world does that work to get rid of Kalba Savua's nether, right? You can't get rid of the nether if the reality was that the guy in question was an Amaretz, knew nothing, right? If you're telling me that, oh, you wouldn't have given him the money if he was a Talmud Chacham, he wasn't a Talmud Chacham at the time. Well, it doesn't help that he became a Talmud Chacham later. So Tosfos' first answer is, and this is exactly our idea, is that because by then Rabbi Akiva had already decided to go to yeshiva, right? He had already decided to go and learn, even though he was literally an Amaretz, right? He hadn't learned Aleph Beis yet, right? Since at that time he decided to go learn Aleph Beis, it was if he was already considered a new person on the way to become a Talmud Chacham, right? Tosfos' language is Kevin Shehalach. The Bay Rav, right, since he had already gone on the way to the Beis Medrash, the Derechu Beholech Lilmod Shenasa Adam Gadol. He was on the way to becoming an Adam Gadol. Right, we see this elsewhere. We see this elsewhere. The girl mentions that by Rus, right? Again, Shavuot was coming up in a week. Rus, the moment Rus decided to go back with Nami, the Pasuk says, Vatereki Misametzasi. And Nami saw that she was tired. She was exhausted from Pashupshat, from persisting and staying with her mother-in-law. But the Gra says that that's at that point she already became right a new person. All right, she had already decided to convert to become from right similar to Reish Lakish, and she already become tired. She already become considered as if a Beri Chadasha. I saw Rabbi Ari Waxman points out that Rabbeinu Yonah writes in Shari Tshuva and Shar Sheni right a similar idea. That a person that accepts upon himself really accepts upon himself to be Shomer Torah Mitzvos. Right, he has that ability. His language is ki yesh biyado min hayom hazeh schar kol mitzvos. Right, on that day he has the schar of fulfilling all the mitzvos. Asher shama azna medivrei Torah that I heard from Torah. Now in a chinami, right, we have to go and do it. Right, yes, you get a certain amount of schar from making the decision. But we have to then fulfill and follow through. But this is still an unbelievable message, right? We always look, right, at a piece of learning, a piece of Torah, mitzvos, right? A mesechta, a perek, a seder, right? Shas, right? Is something so big, so overwhelming, right? Okay, for those who do Def Yomi, so the mystique of conquering Shas is a little bit, right? It's been knocked down a little bit, just a little, right? But for the rest of us, right, if learning the entire whatever you're dealing with, right, is too daunting, so this message says don't worry, right? And definitely don't give up. Right, you're already considered to be a type of Adam Gadol, right? If you've just decided to start, right? And now obviously you have to still go do it, but you still get tremendous chav for starting, right? That's a tremendous chizuk, right? For anybody who's struggling to get their learning off the ground, or even if you've started and you're kind of like middling in low gear, right? Waiting to take off, and this is a tremendous message for people as we head into Shavuos, because to be totally honest, I hear all the time. That we hear the shmuzes, Shavuos is our own personal Kabbalah Satorah, a reenactment of Har Sinai, the power to transform your Lumina Torah. It's the day we're judged for Ruchnius, blah blah blah. But I hear all the time, people say to me all the time, it's hard to not to feel underwhelmed by the amount of learning that we do or the quality of the learning that we do. Right, it's late. We're tired, the AC isn't blowing strong enough, the AC is blowing too hard, right? The coffee's lousy, I had fleischig, so I can't have milk, the Beis Medrash is noisy. By 2-3 a.m., right, those eyes start getting very heavy. And it's easy to feel a little underwhelmed, maybe even feel badly, right, that you didn't necessarily accomplish either as much as you wanted or as much as other people. But again, realize what we just said, right? I didn't really highlight it because I wanted to make this point. What is Shavuos? Shavuos is our very own personal Kabbalah Satorah, right? What's Kabbalah Satorah? What does that mean, right? It means we accept upon ourselves the Torah. We accept it. We make a commitment. We have a Kabbalah. We make a commitment for the future, right? Just like our own sons on the night of Maimon Har Sinai, right? The goal here is not to learn as much as you can on Shavuos night. Obviously, you should if you can, right? Obviously, it's very valuable. But this is about making kabbalos, about accepting upon yourself to renew and reinforce and whatever, any word you want to insert, right? Your relationship with Limud HaTorah, to be mechazik yourself and kind of redouble our efforts. Now, you don't have to feel bad if you're exhausted at 2 a.m., right? If you're making a concerted effort, right? To kind of reinvigorate your Limud HaTorah tonight, and then making a Kabbalah to and accept upon yourself to kind of reinforce it the rest of the year. That's what you're shooting for, right? And maybe that's one of the reasons why we read Bamidbar before Shavuos, right? To show that it's the Kabbalah. It's the you can become an Adam Gadol, right? By deciding to undertake something and then obviously accomplishing it. But the decision, already at the moment of the decision, you already become an Adam Gadol. Another reason we read Bamidbar before Shavuos, and this is along the same lines, is the following. The pasuk says at the beginning of the parasha, Su'u es rosh kol das b'nei Yisrael, etc., etc., right? Tifkudu osam l'tzivu osam atavi aron, right? Okay, basically the Torah uses the phrase that we've already seen in Parashat Kisisa, Su'u es rosh kol das b'nei Yisrael, right? Count the heads of the entire nation. Rashi explains that the reason HaKadosh Baruch Hu counted B'nai Yisrael, right, was because of his love for them, right? Again, pretty well known. Rashi, like a collector who collects, right, his collector items or whatever, and he counts them all the time to make sure there's nothing missing, right, so too HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And points out Rav Melech Biderman points out that Chazal, right, all over the place, the Chiddush HaArim, etc., point out that the counting was to show us that each and every one of us has a chashivos to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right, you only get to 600,000 if you have a bunch of individual people. Right, if you're missing someone from the 600,000, so then that the 600,000 is lacking. Right, the entire sefer is called, right, the entire sefer, Melech points out, is called Chumash Pikudim. Right, the Chumash of counting. Right, since Bnei Yisrael counted twice, right, once at the beginning, once at the end. Now you might have thought that the reason that Kosh Baruch Hu counts us at the end of the sefer, why does Hashem count Bnei Yisrael at the end of the sefer? Right, what happened? There was a whole laundry list of sins. Right, there was a plague after plague, right, and after the plague of the Bnos Midyan, Bnos Moav, etc. And Kosh Baruch Hu, maybe Kosh Baruch Hu wanted to, you would think that Hashem wanted to show how little are left of all the plagues. Nope, not at all. It's to show how much Kosh Baruch Hu loves each and every single one of us. Right, so you count just not once, but twice, and really three times if you count, right, in Kisisa, to show that every Jew is precious, every Jew is valuable. That's Su Es Rosh, right? Count the Rosh called Asbnei Israel. Everyone is a Rosh. Everyone, right, is ahead. And explains Moshe Feinstein in Darash Moshe, right, and in Shavuos, right? See, that's why Chazal said we should read Bamidbar before Shavuos. Right, says Moshe. Moshe says to counteract those who have Chalishas Hadas, those who have, like we just explained, right, those who think that their Torah learning isn't important because they're not going to reach this level or that level or because they won't end up accomplishing this or that. First of all, you can accomplish that and you will reach that level. Now, you don't really know your own strength. But aside from that, even if your goal, yes, you're right in a sense that not everybody is going to be the next Rav Chaim Kanievsky. Fine. But still, each person is still supremely valuable to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? Your Torah learning, not mine, not Rav Chaim's, Olav Shalom, right? Not the Gadol HaDorot, whoever it is, you can debate that from now until your Torah learning, right? I can't accomplish your Torah learning. The Gadol of the generation can't accomplish your Torah learning. I can't learn Torah like you can. Only you can learn Torah like you can, right? And therefore, your learning is inherently valuable to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why it says Rav Moshe, it says Su'u, right? Lift up, right? That to show that every single person, right, is raised, right, in the counting, right? Each on their own level, right? Each person realizes that they're valuable enough to be counted the same as every other Jew, right? Again, when you count 600,000 Jews, right? It's me and you and Rav Chaim, and let's say Gershon Edelstein and Rav Ashoyes, and all those people are individuals. And if you take me away from the count, or you away from the count, or Rav Asher away from the count, so the count is lacking exactly the same. Right, the numbers go down exactly the same. Right, every Jew is a chilek of the 600,000 or however many Jews there are in the count. Right? And if one person is lacking, the entire klal, right, is lacking. Right, Rav Melech points out that this is the Chiddush HaArim says this is why Bnei Yisrael are compared to stars, because even though from a distance, right, the stars look like they're insignificant and they're just a ton of them, and you know you can't count them. But okay, fine, you can't count them, but they're all these tiny little things up close. Right, all the stars are enormous, powerful balls of energy. Right, that's each and every one of us. Right, we all think that we're really tiny and we're really small and really insignificant, but really we have a tremendous amount of kochos, a tremendous amount of energy that we only begin to understand. So that's the approach that we should have coming up on Matan Torah. That's the approach that we should use to kind of prepare ourselves this week from Parshas Bamidbar on. May we all be zocha to a tremendous Kabbalah Satorah and a tremendous Shabbos.